Now let's open our Bibles, please, to the book of Genesis, first book in the Bible, and find chapter 27. Well, we're studying from the book of Hebrews, chapter 11, where faith is defined and then examples are given. And we have been talking about Jacob, and this is, I don't know, about our fourth or fifth message on Jacob. And so we will continue our study, the account of Jacob and of Isaac and Rebekah, of Esau. These four characters should tell you one thing, one singular thing, and that is that salvation can be no other way than strictly and solely and exclusively by God's grace, nothing else. If you miss that, then you've missed it all. There are wonderful facts here, but if you miss that truth, then you've missed it. God's election from before the foundation of the world, and Christ's blood and redemption and righteousness at the cross by which God justified His people, and the revelation of the Spirit in each generation to those whom God elected, for whom Christ died, all of it is of grace. It's the thing that Jonah learned, and so he said salvation is of the Lord. Well, it's revealed in a longer story in Jacob, and we're studying that story, but it's telling us that salvation is altogether by God's grace. The story actually begins in chapter 25, and in that chapter we saw the birth of two brothers. There are two things that are outstanding. There's a prophecy that is made by God to Rebekah, and that is that there would be two sons, not one, and the older son, whose name was, they would name him Esau, that he would serve the younger. And that went directly in the face of all that was normal in that part of the world. And so Jacob would be the one who would be the ruler over Esau. And that was not something that was acceptable, but it's a very important prophecy that is made. And the second thing is what takes place and the way these two boys look, because Esau comes out and he has a coat of fur on him when he's born. And that coat of fur made him look like a camel, or maybe a little bit later on, the 27th chapter, he looked and felt like a goat, it seems to say to us. So he had this coat of fur on him as he's born, and then holding on to his ankle when he's born is Jacob, and it appears that Jacob is trying to pull him back in. It's like they've been wrestling inside of their mother. Poor Rebekah must have had a terrible, terrible time. But those two facts tell us of the great struggle that would go on between them, and yet God has made a prophecy that must come true. Then we moved over to chapter 27, where we saw now these two men are no longer boys or children, but are men. And at the conclusion of chapter 25, there is the giving away of the birthright, selling the birthright, as it's called. Maybe that would be a third thing to say, that birthright being given away because Esau is hungry. But when we move into chapter 27 and they're full-grown men, fully understanding what is going on around them, Jacob deceives his own father and got his father to give to him the family blessing. And I'll talk about that in a moment. When Esau returns, he's going to realize that what has been done, and he calls it subtlety or trickery. And his anger boils over. So here's this outdoorsman who has the ability to be very angry, to be a killer, and he becomes angry. So today's theme, if I were going to give this a title, it would be something like when love yields to lying. So his love has given up to lying. Now nobody likes to be deceived. Nobody wants to be lied to. The basis of all human relationships is honesty. It's integrity. Husbands and wives, children and children, parents and children, people at church, people at work, it's all based on being honest. Well, what we have in this family is a deception. And maybe the worst kind of deception is this brother deceiving another brother, and the pain is considerable. So what this is saying is how evil they are and how unworthy they are. There's a saying that something like, if you fool me once, shame on me. If you fool me, shame on you. If you fool me twice, shame on me. So here what you have is exactly that. Shame on you, Jacob, for fooling him the first time, but then Esau has to say, shame on me for letting it happen the second time. So that's the story that is before us. And so I want you to look with me as we have made it through verse 29, and we're going to pick up at verse 30. So if you'll look in chapter 27 and verse number 30, the blessing is named in 28 and 29. In verse 30 it says, and it came to pass, have all of you found your place, chapter 27 of Genesis. In verse 30, it came to pass as soon as Isaac is the daddy, had made an end of blessing Jacob. He's the younger son of the two, Jacob and Esau. Jacob was yet scarce gone out from the presence of Isaac his father, that Esau his brother came in from hunting. So Isaac had given and Jacob had received the entire blessing. The verbal exchange marked the arrangement. There's no going back on it. This blessing has three parts to it. First of all, it is temporal. It has to do with wealth and possessions. There's going to be a double amount of wealth and possessions that will go to the one who receives this blessing. So in this case, it's going to be Jacob. So temporal blessings are involved. And then there are spiritual blessings that are involved. There is the covenant of promise, and then there is worship leadership that would be important. And then the final thing has to do with inheritance as you go forward. So looking down through the generations, the heritage that would go to future generations is going to be passed to the one who has received the birthright in chapter 25, and now the family blessing in this one. So they're temporal and spiritual, and they have to do with inheritance of future generations. Notice it says that Jacob was scarce gone out of the presence of Isaac. No doubt as soon as Jacob received that promise, he didn't wait around. It was a hasty departure. He had secured the blessing. He wasn't going to talk to his dad. Actually, they had nothing to talk about. I doubt that Jacob and Esau had spent 10 minutes talking and no telling how long. In part, he departed in haste, not to be questioned anymore, and of course he hoped to avoid any confrontation with his brother Esau. So he got away. We might also look at this in a providential sense, because Esau had come in from the field. He's at the place where he does his cooking. He's cleaned the animal. He's put the animal on to cook, however he did it. He made the meal, and it's all ready, and he's to bring it. Both of them are living in the same compound, but Jacob and Esau do not cross paths. So I see here not only the human initiative on the part of Jacob, but the providence of God to make sure they don't cross paths. Now look at verse 31. And he also had made savory meat. Now this is Esau. And he brought it into his father, and he said unto his father, that's Isaac, let my father arise and eat of his son's venison, that thy soul may bless me. And so Isaac had sent him out to find the meat, and he had killed the venison, and he brought the venison home, and he's taken time to prepare it, and it's all just the way he wants it. And so he comes in with great delight in what he has to say. Let my father arise, get up off of your couch, sit up here at the table. You're going to eat the venison and do as you said, give me this blessing. Well, notice this, that Jacob's stew was not fresh. It was an imitation. It wasn't the real thing. And yet, Jacob, what it shows about Jacob is that Jacob was a sham. He was a hypocrite. He was a pretender. He wasn't real. It's a picture of religion, if you please, that is a sham. It's not in the heart. It's not according to truth. That's natural religion. It's not only because of Jacob, but this whole thing worked because of Rebecca, because Rebecca knew how to take almost any kind of meat and make it so that Jacob would like it. And she made it so that he couldn't really tell the difference between what he was eating that either of the sons had made. Now Esau's stew, on the other hand, was composed of fresh venison. And so he says, rise up and eat, that you may bless him. We can see that he was respectful toward his father. He was dutiful toward his aged father. Isaac had requested, and now Esau has gladly provided. And Esau is so hopeful. His heart is filled with such high hopes. He believes that now he is finally going to be able to right the wrong of selling or giving away, or as he would say, Jacob stealing or taking the birthright from him. And he's finally going to get this reversed back around. But what we see, even though this was very real to him, as false religion is real to its adherents, the air is about to go out of the balloons. Look at verse 32. And Isaac, his father, said unto him, Esau, who art thou? And he said, I am thy son, thy firstborn, Esau. Well, Isaac heard the undeniable voice of his eldest son, but it would appear to me that Isaac's heart must have just sunk to his feet. Because you remember that he had said earlier, the voice that I hear is not the voice of my son, but you tell me your son in the field. Because remember that that Rebekah had put the goat skin upon Jacob. And so as he felt of Jacob, he said, well, the field is of Esau, so I'll go along with this. But he just couldn't quite believe his ears when Esau comes in. It's the voice that's natural to him. It's the voice of sincerity. That is undeniable, but we know that that's not him. And so he said, who are you? I believe it is in heart he knew pretty quick, don't you? And he said, I am thy son. Now that's true. He was the firstborn by nature. He says, I am thy firstborn son. In other words, I'm your firstborn son, so I am the one who should get the blessing. I am thy son. And that was true. He was the firstborn by nature, but he was not the firstborn by right. And the reason is because he had sold the birthright. But beyond that, he was not the son by divine election. He was not the son of promise. That's what they're called in Romans 9. It's what Jacob is called, the son of promise. He was the son who was given that to him. So he was not the son of divine election or the son of promise. And Esau could not alter that, and Isaac could not alter that. Who are you? I'm your son, your firstborn. Now look at verse 33. And Isaac trembled very exceedingly. What words are there? Let me stop there. He trembled very exceedingly. His blood pressure went up. Adrenaline poured into his system. His nerves were set on edge. Confusion flooded his mind. Terror strangled his heartstrings. And he uncontrollably trembled very exceedingly. He's shaking. He's shaking from his sandals up to the tunic. He is trembling all over. And he asks two questions here. Who and where? Now that's what we do when we're upset. Our words get tangled up. So he asks two questions. Who? Where? So he's upset about what is going on here. Who? Where is he that hath taken venison and brought it to me? And I have eaten of all that was before that came, and have blessed him. Yea, and he shall be blessed. So there are several things here that are unsettling. First of all, he's unsettled at the cunning of Jacob at obtaining the blessing. He just can't believe that he would be that cunning. He has disappointment at Esau losing the blessing. He's upset at the blessing going to Jacob in the place of Esau. He's upset most of all at his own inability before God. Because I think at some point here, Isaac comes to the reality that though he had moved to give this blessing to his oldest son, he knows what God has said, and that is that the blessing is going to go to the younger son. The younger is going to rule over the elder. He knows that. But God has providentially overruled his best efforts, his greatest intentions to give the blessing to Esau. He's not going to be able to do it. And surely, if not before, he remembers all of this, that Esau shall serve Jacob. Isaac cannot change that. He trembled at his helplessness as Saul trembled before God on the road to Damascus. And then it appears here that he is in panic and frenzy with the use of his words, and his tongue is tied. Who and where? He knew it was Jacob that had done that, and he says, I ate with him before you came, and he's asking, how could this be? How could this possibly take place? Then I see a change in his thinking. He comes to grips with the situation, and he says, here as in the midst of all of this, I have eaten what came to me, and I have blessed him, and he shall be blessed. There's nothing I can do about it. It's done. He's come to grips with the situation. He considered Jacob, he considered Esau, he considered himself, and he considered God. And when he considered God, he said, it cannot be changed. This is it. I have blessed him. He shall be blessed. And so when the apostle clarifies in Hebrews 11 and verse 20, by faith Isaac blessed Jacob, it is because it has become real to him right here and right now that he knows what he has done. And that's the reason that it can be said in the New Testament, by faith he did it. He didn't do it with a true heart, but now he knows that what he has done is because of what God has brought to pass in his own providence. Thus we conclude that Isaac spoke this by faith and is firmly persuaded that this was what the Lord had done. Now look at verse 34. And when Esau heard the words of his father, he cried with a great and exceeding bitter cry and said unto his father, bless me, even me also, O my father. So when Esau heard that another person had come before his father, that someone had beat him to the blessing, that Isaac ratified the action and that it was irrevocable, that Isaac now spoke with such conviction that the blessing was before God and not just before them. And the result was he was torn to pieces inside. Here is this strong man from the time of his birth, practically a man from childhood, but he's torn to pieces inside. This is the second time this word exceeding is used. It's used regarding Isaac in verse 33, and now concerning Esau in verse 34. There was an exceeding trembling, and now there is an exceeding bitter cry. There's an indescribable anguish that squeezed his soul. Rage against his brother overwhelmed him. Envy for the blessing has consumed him. Desperation has enclosed his thoughts and his emotions. And so he cries out, bless me also, even my father. He had been a man of spiritual blindness and ignorance, and he was still a man of spiritual blindness and ignorance. He foolishly imagined that he could petition his father, and his father, Isaac, had the power to give him an equal blessing. He didn't know that the lines of God's sovereignty have drawn the line. He didn't understand that Isaac could not do what he's asking him to do. Isaac had told him, if you go and get venison for me, I will bless you. Isaac could not overrule God. Isaac could not overrule God. You cannot overrule God. I don't care what you decide, what you say you're going to do. If it is not God's will, it cannot and it will not be done. God will overrule. He didn't see the line. He didn't understand the theocratic rule of the Almighty. You see, we live in a spiritual world. We can't see it. We think we live in a spiritual world, but a physical world, but we live in a spiritual world. We live in a world in which God will have His ways. So here is a prayer, here is a petition with sincerity, but it's not going to come to pass. Doesn't matter how sincere your prayers are, how sincere your petitions are, God is still God. He did not see the fixed nature of God's will. And if he did, it was too late. He had waited too long. He had no interest whatsoever in the things of God. He had lightly treated spiritual things all of his life, and it's too late. Reminds me sort of the parable that Jesus gave, the parable of talents, and he spoke of a certain fellow who had wasted all the gifts that he had, and so Jesus said, take this worthless fellow and cast this unprofitable servant into outer darkness. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. He had wasted it all. Well, that's exactly the way Esau was. It was gone. The blessing is gone. His birthright as the firstborn is gone. His place in the family is gone. His opportunity to lead with spiritual decisions and worship, they're gone. His place as the son of promise is gone. His opportunity to bless future generations, it's gone, it's gone, gone, gone. It's all gone. It's irrevocably gone. Look at verse 35. And he said, "Is he not rightly named Jacob? For he hath supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright, and behold, now he has taken away my blessing. Hast thou not reserved a blessing for me?" Well, in verse 35, he said, "Thy brother hath come with subtlety and hath taken away thy blessing." Some view the word subtlety with wisdom, but no, it means that he came with fraud. Let me jump down here to verse number 36, which I just read. Esau supplied both the question and the answer. Is he not rightly named Jacob? That's the question. And here's the answer, for he has supplanted me these two times. What does the name Jacob mean? Well, the name Jacob itself is a name that means to displace, replace, to usurp, dispose. It means to trip up so as to overthrow. It is translated by the old translators by the word supplant. And that word means to trip up so as to overthrow. Two times, the birthright, and he says here that he hath taken the birthright. Is that true, that he took the birthright? And the answer is, it is not true. He did not take the birthright to him. He had supplanted him. The second thing, he has taken the blessing, but no, he didn't take the blessing at all. He was deceptive, and both of them gave into the blessing, gave into that. I'm going to finish. I'll have to finish this next week. I want you to go with me to Hebrews 12, though, and I want you to see something in Hebrews 12 concerning Esau. In Hebrews chapter 12, and if you'll look in verse number 16, let me go back to verse 15. I have 3 or 4 minutes left here, so let me look at verse 15. Looking diligently, I'm chapter 12 of Hebrews, verse 15, looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, that is, give up on the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness, oh, the root of bitterness is so easy to get in our lives, springing up and trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. Notice again the repeat of this word, lest there be any fornicator or profane person. Now, when he mentions a profane person, he mentions Esau. What does the word profane mean? Profane means one void of piety, one void of religious interest, one who has no interest or thoughts about God, one who furthermore disrespects God. So when he uses the word profane, he calls him a profane person. And all of his life, he's now at least 40 years old, he's had no interest in God or the things of the family or the blessings of spirituality at all. So it said, he calls him a profane person. And then here is the commentary on it. As Esau, who for one morsel of meat sold his birthright. It doesn't say that Jacob stole it. It says that he sold it. And he sold it for a little bit of soup. And then he comments on it. For we know how that afterward, when he would have inherited the blessing, he was rejected. For he found no place of repentance, though he sought it carefully with tears. So that's what we're looking at back here, is he's seeking it with tears. Give it to me, give it to me. Give me a blessing. I'm broken inside. Give me this blessing. But does that mean that there's repentance? No. So you find many in the world of religion who cry. They'll go to an altar, if you please, and they'll bend on a knee, and they'll weep, and they will be broken, and they'll have a reformation. Oh, there's a lot of reformation in religion. They were drunks. They were profane people. They were used drugs, adulterers. They turned themselves around with many tears, but there's no repentance. And that's the point that we're being told. There can be weeping, but there is no repentance. Well, that's the commentary on Esau. And so as we go through here, we see this man. So I'll have to come back to our text next week and pick it up. We know that there is no repentance in this man. May God give us repentance. May God give His people true heart, godly repentance.